Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
Keith sent me a story, said, Steve, this one caught my eye. It used a few of your favorite words. And it involves two attorneys getting into a squabble. And things like this didn't used to make national news, but now they can because the way this works, court filings in federal court in particular are available online. And when somebody finds something like this, they can simply post the link and say, hey, everybody, check this out. Now, what I've got in front of me is an order in a case that happened recently in the Southern District of Florida. And it's unimportant. It doesn't matter who the parties are because it's someone suing a business. But what matters here is the fact that the attorney for the one side and the attorney for the other side, started fighting. Not physically fighting, but arguing, squabbling, that kind of thing. And one of them requested that the court sanction the other. Not good. When two kids get in a fight in the living room and trash the living room, and one of them calls in the parents, it might not end well for both children. And that's what's happening here. So we have an order on a motion for an evidentiary hearing and sanctions. So what happened was one of the parties requested that the court take a look at this. And that's called a motion, where you ask the court to do something. And this is the order that resulted from that motion, from that request. And it says, this matter came before the court upon plaintiff's motion for an evidentiary hearing and sanctions. Pursuant to the motion, plaintiff's counsel seeks sanctions against defendant's counsel based on alleged conduct at certain depositions in this case. And depositions are where the parties outside of a courtroom can bring in a court reporter and bring in witnesses and question the witnesses under oath to find out what they would testify to if called to court or so on. And depositions happen in quite a few cases. Parties are almost always deposed if depositions happen. So if I sue you, your attorney might take my deposition. My attorney might take your deposition. And then there's witnesses. Their depositions might be taken also. Depends on the case, okay? So these two attorneys frequently represent opposing parties in Fair Labor Standards Act cases before this court. So these are two attorneys who specialize. One of them specializes in handling the plaintiff's cases, and one of them specializes in defending the cases. And as a result, these two bump into each other a lot. And apparently they've gotten along before this. And I've mentioned before, I do Lemon Law. Lemon Law is a small community. There's a handful of attorneys who do this in most states. Some states there aren't that many at all. But in Michigan, we all know each other. I know the members of the plaintiff's bar. And I also know the guys who and gals who defend Ford, GM, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, Nissan, you name it. And so I have had literally hundreds of cases with some of these attorneys. They know me. I know them. We've had hundreds of cases together. Okay? And so we get along. We have to get along. Well, it turns out that these two have had more than 20 cases against each other in this district over the past 3 years. They even appeared as co-counsel in one case. At one point in time, they worked together. Until recently, the judge writes, the two have largely worked professionally with one another. At the very least, when they appeared in matters in this court, they were generally respectful to each other. That professionalism came to a screeching halt on both sides. And this is why it's dangerous for the one attorney to say, hey, judge, look what he's doing. Judge says instead they have started to engage in tit-for-tat squabbles and accusations that have done nothing but waste the court's time, their own time, and their clients' money. These are shenanigans that reasonable and professional attorneys do not engage in. Shenanigans. One of the attorneys has already been sanctioned in this case for non-discovery-related conduct, and discovery is the whole process where you go through in civil litigation and try to, you know, see what the other side's case is all about. And within reason, you're allowed to find out what their witnesses are, what their evidence is. They've got to file a witness list and an exhibit list. And you go through it and you try to figure this stuff out in advance. And you try to build your case up and you try to examine the other side's case. And a lot of cases settle as a result of discovery. When you find out the other side has an overwhelming case, you settle. Says here, though, both attorneys have continued to engage in needless and inappropriate bickering in filings in this case and other cases pending before me. They've continued to do so, notwithstanding the court's warnings that their conduct must cease and that they may be sanctioned if it does not. The principal discovery dispute, which is addressed in the motion and the briefing, concerns the two attorneys' conduct during depositions taken in this case in April of 2021. Depositions of a non-party. So this is not one of the people involved in the lawsuit directly. This is presumably a witness. So a witness gets brought in to be deposed, and stuff happened. All three deps were conducted remotely. By way of background, a few weeks before the deps in this case, the two attorneys' associates attended a deposition in a different case where both firms were involved. According to one attorney, at the beginning of that dep, the court reporter indicated she could not hear the other attorney because of his face mask and asked him to remove it, which he declined to do so. Then, approximately 2 hours into the dep, that attorney asked the court reporter whether she had transcribed a specific objection he had made, and she stated she had not because she couldn't hear it. He did not believe her and pointed out that he claimed he was sitting equidistant from the microphone with respect to his client. Consequently, that attorney stated that he objected to the deposition and that the court reporter was hostile towards him for the remainder of the deposition. So, you know, this is the kind of bickering that it's already gone too far. Now, this right here is not the kind of stuff that's going to cause sanctions, but when you see this, you're going, look, cooperate with the court reporter. You want the court reporter to be able to hear you and understand you so they can transcribe you properly. That will help your case. Turning to depositions in the case, the court has listened to recordings of the relevant portions of the first two depositions and has reviewed a transcript from the third. Based on the court's review of the foregoing, the court finds that an evidentiary hearing is not necessary. When one of these depositions occurred, the same court reporter from the earlier dep appeared. Therefore, at the outset, the attorney objected to the deposition proceeding with that court reporter. Believing the court reporter had not made an accurate transcript in the prior case, and apparently believing that the inaccuracy was intentional, the attorney did not want to proceed with the same court reporter. Regardless of whether his concerns regarding the court reporter were justified from an objective standpoint at that time, they were at least justified from a subjective standpoint. In objecting, the attorney probably said more than what was necessary, but that did not excuse what came up next. Specifically, the other attorney yelled at him twice to shut the F up. And F is just the first of four letters in that word. At that point, about 2 minutes into the deposition, the other attorney disconnected from the remote deposition. He then proceeded to seek the court's intervention. And the first attorney also followed up with his own email. So both attorneys then emailed the court. Now, the court directs parties to seek a discovery hearing via email, but the emails sent by both attorneys contained material far in excess of what is permitted under the court's discovery procedures order. And federal court in particular is famous for giving you orders and instructions saying, here's what you need to do. Both parties, plaintiff, defendant, here you go. You got to file this, file this, file this, file this. And by the way, with this filing, you got to do this. This filing's got to do this. And some of these things have subparts. And more subparts. And it's like an outline with instructions. And it'll say specifically, if you need to contact the court, here's what you need to do. And if the two of you need to contact the court, get together, discuss it, and then the two of you it'll lay all this stuff out. So it appears that both emails were unquestionably improper communications. So both parties separately called the chambers of the court. They called the judge's office directly to seek court intervention prior to sending their emails, which was also inappropriate in light of the court's discovery procedures order. Based on those communications, the court entered the order setting a telephonic discovery hearing and other requirements, requiring the parties to confer and schedule a hearing for the following day in the event that the parties were unable to resolve their dispute. The court specifically noted in the order that based on the descriptions of the dispute provided by plaintiff's counsel and defendant's counsel, the dispute appears to be one that counsel should be able to resolve if they act reasonably and professionally. So the two little kids are fighting in the sandbox. They call the parents over. Parents look at it and go, look, you can take care of this yourselves. Just be polite. Okay? That's literally what this boils down to. Act reasonably and professionally. And you could narrow that down to just be polite. So the order further warned counsel that if the parties are unable to resolve all issues, it is likely that one or both attorneys will be sanctioned. In accordance with that order, the two attorneys filed a joint notice of compliance wherein they represented to the court that they resolved all issues. Therefore, the court canceled the hearing that was coming up. The court later learned that the deposition had ultimately proceeded and was completed with the same court reporter. Now, when the one attorney who complained and said that he thought the court reporter was ignoring him, he returned after about 40 minutes. He engaged in a dialogue with the court reporter, followed by a dialogue with opposing counsel, both of which served to unnecessarily further delay the deposition before it proceeded. Both of the attorney's actions prolonged the deposition and exacerbated matters. So apparently they got in an argument before the deposition that may have included the court reporter. The next deposition to occur was that of the non-party on April 27th. The same court reporter was present. Consequently, at the beginning, the attorney was unhappy, once again objected to using the court reporter. However, he said far more than what was necessary. It is one thing to preserve an objection. It is quite another to launch into the lengthy speaking objection that Mr. Second Attorney made. He should have briefly objected and moved on, or alternatively, if warranted, terminated the deposition and sought an order under the court rules. So one of the things that you have to keep in mind is that if you make an objection on the record, whether in court or at a deposition, once you've made your objection, you're done. Now, you may want to explain the objection, just briefly. Objection, relevance in a courtroom, or objection, privileged material at a deposition. Okay? You raise your objection, you identify your objection, and you stop. There's no need to go into a tirade, a diatribe, a lengthy dissertation. There's no need to do any of those things. No need. Because all you're doing is wasting time. Okay? And I hate to break news to you. Time is all we've got. So if you're wasting time there, you're it's bad. But you're also wasting your client's time, which is money. You're wasting the court reporter's time. And the court reporter is getting paid by the hour, but still it's just wasteful. It's wasteful. So the guy goes into this long objection, which is not necessary, which the court has found, and says that this is inappropriate. Unfortunately, in responding to questions from that attorney, the court reporter made things worse rather than better. But can you blame the court reporter at this point? So then the attorney decided to raise things to the next level. So there's a footnote here. Footnotes are often fun in federal court orders. For example, after stating his objection to proceeding with the court reporter and incorporating his description of the court reporter's failure to transcribe his objections and deposition in the prior case, the attorney asked her if she had transcribed his objection. Rather than simply saying yes, she quibbled with whether what he had stated was an objection since testimony had not yet begun. That's an interesting point. Nevertheless, she made it clear that she had transcribed his statements because she could hear them. Rather than accepting the fact that she had transcribed his comments and could hear him, the attorney chose to prolong the semantic disagreement over whether his statements were an objection. The other attorney then felt the need to chime in. A back-and-forth squabble between the two attorneys then ensued, including silly arguments over who had argued with whom. So let's back up. The two attorneys argued, including silly arguments over who had argued with whom. These are attorneys arguing over who's arguing. He hit me. No, he hit me. Well, he hit me first. No, he hit me first. Stop hitting yourself. Why are you hitting me? Why are you hitting yourself? They're arguing over who is arguing. It's like a perpetual motion machine or a cat chasing its tail. Ultimately, that went on for 10 minutes. You know, I might want to buy a copy of this deposition. When the parties returned for their third deposition, the same court reporter was there. The attorney began the deposition by asking and repeating The court reporter questions, including whether she could hear him and whether she was transcribing everything he was saying. And asking a court reporter, are you writing down everything I'm saying, is a stupid question. That's what they do. That's their job. Again, it is one thing for an attorney to ask a court reporter if she can hear him, but it is another to repeat the types of questions that he's been asking. He then proceeded by making an objection similar to the one he made at the prior deposition, once again saying far more than what was necessary. And the two parties then once again engaged in an extended improper dialogue that served to only further delay and impede the deposition and further exacerbate the issues. And remember, there's an attorney making objections and arguing with a court reporter. There's another attorney who's watching all this and occasionally interjecting and arguing over who's arguing with whom. And there's some poor witness who got dragged in to testify and is watching this little sideshow with the Three Stooges, looking at it going, why am I here? Why am I here? Talk about a waste of time. So the two argued and engaged in an extended improper dialogue. And one of the attorneys said, if I were the court reporter, I would sue the other attorney for defamation and file a bar complaint against him. Apparently, in that vein, the court reporter also said at some point that she may or might sue the attorney for slander and file a bar complaint against him. The back and forth between the two attorneys then continued. It is undisputed that at some point, one attorney cursed at the other, either saying F you or F off. Again, the full word. And now here's the odd part. The court reporter did not transcribe this. So now all bets are off. Court reporter should transcribe it. It's a verbal statement said out loud at a hearing. And the fact that the court reporter didn't transcribe that is actually a little bit of a problem. Now, if there's another recording of this, like a video recording or an audio recording, they can double check that. But the court reporter who's creating a transcript at the moment should have transcribed that. Should have. So after both attorneys wasted time arguing, the one attorney suspended the deposition. The parties then sought court intervention. Court scheduled a hearing for later that day. In the interim, the parties returned to the deposition with a different court reporter. Took them three tries to figure that one out. As such, the plaintiff's motion for a protective order was denied as moot. Additionally, the court ordered that if the parties wanted to seek sanctions against another party or counsel, a written motion for sanctions would need to be filed. This current motion followed. Now, there's rules that say that the court can indeed sanction a party. The problem here is that both attorneys did things for which they can be sanctioned. The one attorney's profane language was clearly unprofessional and is unacceptable. Indeed, continuation of such conduct could be grounds for a referral to the Florida Bar or for further professional training. However, the impeding, delaying, and frustrating of the deposition came from both counsel's behavior, which patently displayed more interest in getting the last word and baiting each other than in actually resolving their dispute. In other words, neither attorney here is blameless. And this is when you realize you shouldn't have filed the motion. You shouldn't have called the parents over. Neither is the court reporter. Court reporter's not blameless. Even if she did not transcribe the objections at the initial deposition in the other case because she genuinely could not hear him, and even if she felt unfairly impugned by the attorney, she made inappropriate comments at two of the depositions. At one deposition, after the attorney disconnected, the court reporter stated that that attorney is psychologically unstable and there's something wrong with him. At the other deposition, she threatened to sue him and file a bar complaint against him. Notably, court reporters are supposed to be, and this is a quote, guardians of the record because of their impartiality and role within the judicial process. So they're supposed to be impartial. If they can't be impartial, they shouldn't be there. Meaning that if she's got a problem to the point where she can't do her job, she needs to actually step back and go, look, get another court reporter. That's what she should do. And so she should have done that. So making the statements and the insults is a problem. Ultimately, though, the attorney was not wrong to use the court reporter for the first deposition, but he should have made sure to retain a different court reporter for the ones that followed. And regardless of whether or not the attorney or the court reporter is in the right regarding the objections in the hearing, it was apparent after that first deposition that the continued use of that court reporter ran the risk of both further inflaming the one attorney and injecting at least the specter of partiality into the proceedings. The problem had an easy fix, which was to use a different court reporter. So they finally got one, apparently. But the judge goes on to say, nevertheless, the attorney who complained about the court reporter had also acted unreasonably and shares in the blame here. He was entitled to state his objection, the grounds therefore, but he went on. And so the judge points out that both sides, both attorneys, have wasted the court's time, the deponent's time, that'd be the witness, and their client's money. They both escalated the disputes here rather than pursuing the easy common sense means of resolving them at the court. As the court said at the outset, reasonable and professional attorneys resolve these types of disputes. Under the circumstances, both should not be allowed to profit from their actions, and their clients should not have to pay. Therefore, the court will require the first attorney to write off any time incurred in connection with the present dispute. Sanctions are warranted because his conduct violated the rules. The second attorney, which is the one who objected the court reporter, should not be awarded sanctions here in light of his conduct. And so they are both getting in trouble. And the court similarly expects that objecting attorney to exercise billing judgment and write off his time related to present dispute, which was unnecessarily and unreasonably incurred. However, as the motion is one by one party seeking sanctions against the other, and there was no counter motion, the court won't award that relief right now, but he hints that if the other side raises it, he would. As of right now, one attorney got sanctioned. The other attorney didn't yet, but he probably will. But the judge basically said, look, you guys, you're behaving like children. He said, you guys have known each other for many, many years. You've had 20 cases together. You've even been co-counseling a case together. You should be able to get along. And the fact that you can't is bizarre. So I've seen attorneys snap before, but not on this level. I've also had friends of mine send me transcripts and go, look what happened at a deposition I was at where some attorneys snapped. And you always look at that and go, it's difficult. It is difficult. I've been in situations before where I wanted to snap and you can't. And you have to, the same reason as a poker player, you'd love to jump up and down and go, look what I got. You can't do that just yet, you know? So sometimes you have to bottle in your emotion, restrain yourself, and behave politely. And that's really what this boils down to. You can talk about the rules. The rules have got all these definitions of what's unprofessional and don't do this and don't do that. It boils down to behave politely. So getting back to the very beginning, there's a deposition. So there's a witness, two attorneys, and a court reporter. So those are the four necessary people who are involved in this. And an attorney asks a question, and the other attorney objects, and he asks the court reporter, did you get my objection? And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that, because at these hearings, it's not uncommon that parties are looking at different people, they're looking around, they're taking notes, and a court reporter does catch everything for the most part, but once in a great while, they'll miss something. And so if the attorney knew that he had spoken softly, was facing the wrong direction, or for whatever reason, wanted to make sure his objection was noted, there's nothing wrong with saying, did you catch my objection? And if the court reporter said, no, I did not, I couldn't hear you. The answer is not to say, what's your problem? Are you ignoring me? The answer is to say, oh, we need to fix that. Because the court reporter needs to hear you. And if you legitimately think the court reporter is messing with you or ignoring you or not writing down what you're saying, get a new court reporter. And you have every right in the world to say, you know something? The court reporter we had at the last deposition, I didn't care for. Let's get another one. And there's no problem with that. So the fact that instead they chose to keep fighting and bickering, yeah, it's both of their faults. It's both of their faults. So it's a crazy case. And I'm glad it got sent to me by Keith. It's actually been picked up by a lot of news services. And the problem here is that they started to engage in tit-for-tat squabbles and accusations that wasted the court's time, their own time, and their client's money. Shenanigans that reasonable and professional attorneys do not engage in. So it's a great story out of the United States District Court, Southern District of Florida. Questions or comments, put them below. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. Why is your nose in the middle of your face? Because it's your center.